All right, take two.
It's funny because one of my buddies has already mentioned the bong noise, and I don't know if he realizes what you're doing.
Oh, you
know,
no.
You're just doing the slurpy thing in your mouth with water in your mouth, but...
It's whiskey, by the way.
But yeah. Yeah, nice. But it's funny because, you know, last time you did that, I think it was my first time as co-host?
Could have been.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And so I will forever remember that now. So, but... Yeah, did you hit the record button?
I hit the this time.
Okay, so, just checking.
69 episodes published, about 10 episodes recorded and not published. The first time ever that we've started, and Dane and I got about 3 minutes into this podcast.
Oh, it was the best 3 minutes. It's too bad they're not going to hear it.
It was a good. Like, no, we'll see if we can recreate it here.
No, they missed it.
They missed it.
Sorry, if they're not paying attention. Screw that.
All right, so it's Sunday night. Dane and I tagged up. Let's see, it's 7:53 p.m.
Yeah, and we started at what, 3?
3 o'clock, yeah. We met at the trailhead. Yep. We had intended to do a mountain bike ride, had a big group planned to come, but we've had this crazy spotty weather today. Yep. We've had everything in the local area from rain to sleet to snow to hail
to sunshine. To sun. Just crazy.
And so. Where we live... you know, not all trails are like this. And it's for sure, like if you live up in the Pacific Northwest, right, you ride in the rain. That's just what you do.
Because it's always raining.
Yeah. But our trails, you know, we try to maintain the tread. And when it rains, we try to give the trails time to soak that up and deal with it. Because if you ride on it, you'll jack up the tread pretty bad. So we decided to switch to a gravel ride, which we just did like on a paved trail.
Yeah.
And, and Dane showed up with a goddamn e-bike. And so, I'm on an acoustic bike or a naughty bike.
Yep.
I want to start out by giving a couple shout outs.
Oh.
And I don't know that Dane's going to agree with these shout outs, but
I have opinions.
He's got opinions. Okay. And keep in mind that Dane, you know, runs and owns a bike shop and I do not, I'm a consumer, but from my perspective, a couple shout outs to a couple companies. And the first is 1UP, and that's the number one in UP. There's two different 1UP companies in the bike industry. What I'm talking about is the 1UP company that makes bicycle racks, like car racks.
Yep.
So I've got a 1UP rack for my car or for my wife's car. And we've had it, I think I bought it maybe 3 or 4 years ago. It was quite a while ago. And it's been an amazing rack. It gets used all the time. It's like forever on the back of my wife's car. We've driven all over with it, long distance trips, you know, all day long. My wife, she's got a Honda Pilot and that's how she transports her bike. Mm-hmm. And a couple of the arms got bent over the last 4 years. And so they got bent so bad that the rack wasn't working great. And so I wrote 1UP. I'm like, your product's been amazing. I've already got 10 times my money's worth out of it. I'm super happy with it. These arms are bent. I'm trying to figure out what to do. I don't want to buy a brand new rack or whatever. So like, can I bend these back or could you sell just these arms? And they're like, hey, these arms bent because you didn't maintain the rack properly.
Ooh.
Here's how to maintain it. And they showed me. They sent me some links and stuff. And then they said, hey, we'll send you some new arms.
Nice.
And so for free of charge, no shipping, no nothing, after 4 years.
Yes.
Or 3 years. I don't remember exactly. They sent me these arms, super quick install, like 15 minutes. And the rack is like, and now I know how to maintain it because I actually paid attention. By the way, if you have any bike products, you should pay attention to how to maintain them.
it's very important.
Especially when you're spending good money on a very expensive product.
Rocks don't even last forever.
But just I want to give a shout out to 1UP for like how they treated me, my personal experience, a data point of one. But like I was super stoked. They showed me how to maintain it and so that those arms don't get bent again in the future. And they weren't bent for the first 3 years. And the only reason they were bent because over time the bolts get tightened and really all I had to do was loosen the bolts. I didn't know that. And you know, no offense.
Oh, so they were bending from the pivots, kind of tightening.
So my wife was forcing it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
No, I mean, well, let me just say it this way. Someone in our family was forcing it without telling me that there was an issue.
Uh-huh.
And that forcing ended up bending
the
aluminum racks. Anyways, so shout out to 1UP for just amazing from Josh's perspective, my perspective, amazing customer service. And here's the thing, and I'll say something, and Dana, I know you want to jump in. 1UP doesn't work with bike shops. And 1UP, the number one UP. There's a different 1UP that's ONE UP. I'm not talking about that company. I'm talking about the number one UP. Yeah. So 1UP doesn't work with bike shops. their products are amazing. And people, I think, pretty much universally agree that their products are amazing. I think they would be even more amazing if they worked with bike shops.
Yeah. As a bike shop owner, it's really difficult when a company decides not to, you know, sell their product through your business. So we call that consumer direct. And we were talking, we want to do a whole podcast on consumer direct so that we can kind of share different perspectives, you know, because sometimes they get a bad rep and sometimes they don't. And one thing I can tell you about consumer direct that I really find pretty common is that level of customer service is good because you are directly dealing with them and that's who they deal with every single day. So I don't think that's a bad thing, but I'll have a customer from time to time say, hey, I want to get a one-up rack. Can you get it? And I'll have to explain to them they're not consumer or they don't work with bike shops. They're consumer direct. They don't support independent bike shops. And that often leads to a really uncomfortable conversation that I have to have with people.
Yeah.
And it's not really the customer's responsibility to police that or to deal with that, you know, and they're just getting product and there's nothing wrong with that. But we have a lot of customers that are just friends. I mean, honestly, I'd say like most of the people that come to our shop are friends. And so when they hear that that brand does not support the bike shop, then they actually,
they may buy a different type of rack.
They will.
So I got one more shout out.
Sure.
And that's PNW.
Yep. Yeah.
And, so the shout out goes like this. So PNW, we have PNW loam droppers on multiple bikes. They've been great, multiple years that we've had them. And, on my wife's cross country bike or down country bike, cause we over-spec'd it or over, what do you call it? Over torqued, over suspensioned. What do you call it when you put bigger?
Oh, overstroked.
Overstroked.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember you put a, like a bigger, bigger damper? What
air shaft.
Air shaft. Yep. Put a bigger air shaft in Lacey's. Scott. Anyways, it was getting kind of crunchy. It wasn't returning well. Mm-hmm. Occasionally it would get stuck. It was just not performing well. So I was like, screw that. I'm going to buy the new, now we're talking about the different one up.
Yeah.
The O-N-E
one
up. I was going to put, because I've heard their V3 droppers, like the bee's knees.
Yep. I got one on my bike.
Yeah. So. I heard that it's amazing.
I have a PNW on Chili's. Right. So
I was about to like, just get rid of all the loams and buy them. And then I got this email from PNW that said, hey, do you have a PNW dropper that's got some miles on it? Here's how you maintain it. Here's how you service it. Here's how you get it back to like new state. And I watched the video, which was a short video, like 5 minutes. And I was like, holy shit, I can do that. Mm-hmm. So I got some super slick grease. Slick honey was the stuff that I use, but there's slick oleum. There's a whole bunch of different.
Slick oleum is the same thing.
Is it really?
Yeah. Slick oleum is the actual company that makes it. And then Slick Honey was I can't remember if it was a particular, it was branded for bikes, but it's the same exact stuff.
But it's like a high viscosity grease. It's different than like your typical bike grease, right?
Yeah. So the biggest properties, one, super slick, which is great, but it will dissolve in oil. So we use it in the suspension shop all the time because I can lubricate parts that are going to be in oil and the oil isn't, or the grease isn't waterproof.
Right.
So it won't float down and plug holes.
Oh.
And so, so forever, Slick Honey's been popular in bike suspension for that reason.
Okay.
Now, don't put it in your hubs. You know why?
Because it'll melt.
It'll dissolve.
It'll dissolve. Yeah. That's not good.
And so, so there's certain places that you want to use it. And if it's a high heat or high susceptible to water, you want to keep it out of there. So you want a waterproof grease in like hubs and things like that.
So like with basic tools and about 30 minutes and they're very simple instructions, which I'm sure you can get on the PNW website. I was able to, you know, strip apart just like a field dress, this, field dress. That's a mill, or I think that's like a hunting term or something.
Something. Or yeah. Cause term. You do that to animals.
When I have field dress. But I was able to quickly kind of do a basic maintenance on this dropper post. It was super easy, not complicated. And I guess those are synonyms, but, at the end of the 30 minutes, I had this dropper that was working like new again.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
So like I actually wrote PNW and I said, thank you for putting this out because, you know, this refurbed my, or gave these droppers new life. and I'm super stoked. I have one on my down country bike that I'm going to refurb as well when it needs it. And I know now that it wasn't a hard thing to do. And for a home mechanic, it worked out quite well. As long as you have some basic tools and some slick honey or some kind of high viscosity. I think high viscosity is the right way to say it.
I can't remember viscosity.
It's like really thin grease.
Yeah. Super like slick.
Super slick. Slick honey. Right. Yeah. So anyways, shout out to P&W. Shout out to 1UP. Couple recent experiences that I've personally had that I just wanted to mention them on the podcast is
that's awesome. So P&W is one of those, that one that I was mentioning. They do consumer direct and they sell through us through the shops. And I was really happy to start carrying them because they're really reasonably priced. They're good quality. They're easy to work on. And we do the same service you did in the shop, and it's really low cost for most people. So if you don't have the tools and don't have the slick honey and you want the shop,
don't have the time.
Yeah. Don't have the time. That's a big factor. I like that product a lot. We carry so many droppers, so many, and every single one has positives and negatives.
Yeah. What's your favorite?
Oh man, it changes. I was really down on Fox for a little while.
Yeah.
We started servicing them and now it's one of my favorites. Isn't that crazy?
That is weird.
Yeah. So I was going to tell you about my favorite now. I think I'm getting back into Fox. I like the 1UPs. That's on my bike. So I've got almost every...
The 1UP V3.
I've got a 1UP 2 and a 3.
Okay. Is the 3 like amazingly better?
Not really.
The 2s were pretty money.
They're going to hate me if I say stuff like that. Like I'm not evaluating it on a lot of... ton of stuff, you know, it goes up and it goes down and that's what I want. And it doesn't suspension and it doesn't, you know, have
doesn't a suspension. What does that mean?
Okay. So
it
when
doesn't, it doesn't like, bounce.
So when a dropper goes bad, in most cases you have a movement from the air that lets it pop back up over a seal into the oil. And
no one knows what the hell you're talking about.
Okay.
Right now.
All right. So
what does that feel for what does that feel like for the rider?
It feels like it has suspension. Like it
so
has,
it bounces.
Yeah.
So when your dropper goes up, it should just stop and be stable.
Yeah.
And when it starts to go bad, it kind of like squishes.
Yeah. And so on your P&W, it's a cartridge base. So that means that when you serviced it, you're servicing what we call the outside.
Yeah. That's why I called it a field dress because I didn't get into the cartridge.
Yeah. Yeah. The cartridge, when it goes bad, they're sealed and you just get a new one. And 1UPs are similar. And so a lot of brands are. Now the Fox are rebuildable. So they don't have a cartridge. So I have to put O-rings in and maybe some bushings, but there's no cartridge. And so
Punk Rock Dan's got one on his bike. He's got a giant bike.
Okay.
And his seat will do a complete 360.
So that giant brand is made by a company called SDG.
Yep.
If you ask him if he wants it fixed, I'll fix it. The kit is like $20 and I think we charge $45.
Okay.
So
$65 to get
it's
it.
It's a $299 post.
Yep.
When you don't buy it branded as Giant, SDG. And what's happened is the keyways that hold, that thing keeps it straight.
Yep. Those are little brass keys that fit those spots.
In that one, they're plastic.
Oh, that's the problem.
It's I don't know why. It's dumb.
Yep.
First time I saw it, but the repair is super easy. He can maybe do it if he's mechanically inclined. You guys can do it.
Yeah.
It's the same process that you did on the P&W, except you just put in new keys.
Can you upgrade and put brass ones in?
Looked into that. I just bought the new kits that basically have the new keys and I've fixed a couple of them. They really are actually decent posts. They're also cartridge based. Yeah. So that's because we have a suspension company, we look more at like if it's serviceable. So here's what happened with Fox is they weren't serviceable at the shop level when they first came out. And we didn't like that. Thompson is another one that wasn't doing that. And so we tended not to sell that product.
Because
if you've got to send it away for 3 to 6 weeks to get it fixed.
Worthless to me.
We're not really into that.
As a consumer, like, it's worthless to me.
And consumers will get it stock on their bike and then they're stuck with it, you know? And so, and then Fox had a little issue where we're not really sure what happened, but they were having a nitrogen issue where the right amount of pressure wasn't in them.
Yep.
And so the post wouldn't go up all the way or get stuck.
Like from brand new?
Brand new. We were having bikes brand new on the floor. And so I talked to my Fox representative who's awesome and he and I figured out a solution that would work. And he goes, give it a shot, see if it works. And I tested it on two customers that we knew real well. We tested that. They were brand new bikes.
Yep.
And we tested it, and they lasted over a year with no issues.
Yep.
And so it became the standard, and now Fox recommends it. So now more service centers is doing that. So I don't want to say that I invented it, but I'm pretty much was one of the first ones to bring it up. Yeah. And I don't know if Ed would say that I invented it, but back then a company's natural response is just send it back and we'll fix it.
Yeah.
And our response is no, we want to fix it now, and we want to have it ready, and we have the ability to fix it now. So let's figure this out. And so that's what we did. We figured out a fix. We're fixing them regularly. And now we're rebuilding the new version.
Yep.
So the old version took a certain amount of tooling, which was around $600.
Yep.
So for me to buy $600 worth of tools to fix the old version, which they're not making anymore, didn't make any sense.
Yep.
And so I didn't do it. So I invested in the new tools for the new one. And now that we're rebuilding them, I'm pretty happy with them. They rebuild real well. Now, you want to hear a little trivia? Is we were doing a couple in the shop the other day, and I'm constantly revising how they rebuild these things.
Yeah.
Because they'll put out instructions, but I don't think they always do the most efficient job, or maybe they're putting out the instructions when it's new and they haven't done enough to really kind of streamline.
Right.
And I streamlined their old instructions had us just dumping so much fluid, you know, and this stuff's expensive. It's 1.5 weight shock oil. And so it's rare. You don't see it very much. We have to buy these really small bottles and they're expensive. And so anytime you're in a shop environment and you're getting rid of a ton of oil and excess, I'm looking for a way. And so
like good oil, like not like spent oil.
No, this is like when you're putting the new oil in, their process had it kind of overfilling and letting it, you know, like come out and lots of excess fluid. And, you know, in our system, we have what's called a wet table, which means that when the suspension overflows, it overflows into a table that drains into a catch.
Oh, we've got one of those in my bedroom, a wet table. For a different reason, I think, but I'm just
probably not the same thing. our table is a lot like a coroner's table.
That's definitely not the kind of table I have.
Yeah. And so basically when stuff leaks out, it leaks out into a catch bin. And so we don't get it all over. Most shops don't have that because they're not dedicated to suspension. And so having a suspension service where it's getting all over the shop is really messy. And so we developed a new process on those that I didn't spill maybe not even 2 cc's of fluid. And so that's huge. And so now we have a process where we're rebuilding those with no waste.
We'll see how it goes.
Yeah. So P&W shout out, right?
Yeah.
Back to that. Servicing your own product. They're awesome. If you ever want P&W, you can get it at your local bike shop. If you can't ask them, they probably can get it for you. And you don't lose. You just get a lot of extra help if you do that. Right so, on. All right.
All right. Punk Rock Dan, if you want to fix that SDG.
Or yeah.
Giant branded SDG.
Yep. Just let me know.
That's doing a 360.
Yeah.
He kind of likes it. He thinks it's a feature of his bike. He gets to like,
it's like a bar stool.
Yeah. He gets to like, we do different weight distribution when he like, you know,
For
cornering.
That's you could like put a whole new level of put your hips into it. So,
all right. So some more things. So like, this is awesome. We're 45 minutes into the podcast.
I know. We haven't even started.
We haven't even talked about the stupid stuff, but like,
A shout out to Ashley, Justin, Brian, all the people that posted up questions.
We want to start with some of their stuff.
Well, I was going to say, so Ashley had a bunch of questions and I took some pictures so that I could look at them easily. Oh, hey, this is awesome. One of her questions of stupid stuff that she wanted to bring up was, why are seat posts so complicated? And so she is stating in her question that she's changing a lot of saddles.
Yep.
And why are they so weird? Some of them are reverse thread and what have you. And
are they really?
So what she's talking about, they're better than they used to be.
Yep.
Some of them got really stupid, like in the early 2000s, like mid 2000s. So I'll give you an example, like the new Fox dropper posts. They have a weird hardware in there that is reverse thread. Now, the irony of that is when you turn it with the wrench, it goes the right way, but it's turning backwards.
Because upside down?
Yeah, because what it's doing is it's as you're turning it, it's unthreading, so it's tightening, but you're turning it the right way.
I have no idea what the fuck you're talking about right now.
This is what she's talking about.
Jesus Christ, Dane. Yeah. What are you talking about?
So they've set it up to where as you're turning it to tighten it, it is actually unscrewing and it's pulling the head of the seat post tight against the rails. I got you. But because they reversed it, you're still going the tightening way. Okay.
Yeah.
So if it was a normal screw and you were doing this.
But there's logic behind that. To tighten it.
It makes sense, but it's backwards.
You need to tighten it.
Yeah.
But it's actually like manufactured.
If you don't look at it and you don't have to take it apart and you just put a seat on it and tighten it.
It makes sense.
I understand why
they did that.
They did a great job because if they had done it the other, like let's say they had just used a screw,
yeah.
But it's going in reverse and then you had to do it backwards, that would mess with people. They would just have no idea. And so the only time this comes into play is when you take the hardware apart. So like when we're greasing that hardware, so your seat post doesn't creak, then you have to turn it a different way to get it out of there.
Yeah.
Than and that you normally would.
That can be counterintuitive.
It's weird. Yeah. And then, one of the things about seat post clamps that drives me nuts is one, they come apart. Like, why can't you just get them to open up enough to get the
wide
seat
enough
off?
To get the seat off.
Yep. But not fall apart all over the floor.
Yeah.
It drives me nuts. Like that is stupid. Like, why can't they do that? But do you want to hear some of the stupidest ones?
Right.
Okay. One of the stupidest ones I've seen is where most of the seat posts now are kind of two bolt, what they call two bolt. So they have two opposing bolts.
Yep.
And you basically tighten one and it tilts it one way and you tighten the other, it tilts it the other. And then you tighten them both at the same time and it tensions. And so some company at some point decided to make it look smoother, I don't know, or offset or whatever. And they hid the bolt inside the post.
Inside the post?
Yeah. And so to access it, you either had to go in through the top.
Like a BMX bike?
Kind of like the BMX, yeah. Like we were looking at for your dirt jumper.
Yeah.
Or they would have a little dial
that you'd have to turn. Shut the front
door. So what you'd have to do is loosen it so it's loose enough. Then you'd have to turn the front dial to get it to tension.
What the hell company did that?
God, I can't remember.
Okay.
I'm sure it was somebody big, but they figured it out. You know,
yeah, they got rid of that.
Yeah. As soon as they do that, immediately people
How did that get through product testing? They're like, yeah, this probably is dumb.
So you're assuming they do product testing?
Oh, for Christ's sakes, please don't.
We are the product testers.
Oh my God.
All right, I've seen that in the bike industry forever. That's another stupid thing is that why do these companies keep continually testing on us? So they do a certain level of testing and they have pros and they have riders and they'll send stuff out and they'll test that product to an extent, but they don't do like my uncle used to work for GM Proving Grounds.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And this was up in Phoenix
and
he would do this because they had a whole dedicated proving grounds for heat how hot it is in the desert. And so they would drive these cars for months and months and months to test them out. The bike industry doesn't do that. They don't fly the bike to some weird climate and try it out.
They don't have the money to do that.
No.
It's a different... Well, it's interesting.
They just listen to you when you go, this broke. And then they fix it on the new
one. Let's make an offer to the bike manufacturers right now. Mm-hmm. If they want to send us product, we will test it.
Absolutely. I've done that.
Please send us product.
Yep. Yeah.
And if you don't know how to get a hold of us, mountaincog@gmail.com.
Yep. Yep.
I have a thing related to the posts that I had on my list. So
to
piggyback on the badass chick Ashley Wright's comment.
Yes.
My stupid thing is the interface at the bottom of a dropper post.
Yes.
Where the cable comes in.
Okay.
That interface on most droppers sucks.
You want to know a trick?
Please.
When you set up the dropper and you got it on your lever and you're now ready to push the dropper into, the bike or you've put it in too far and you not need to bring it back up, you're always risking that cable will pop out or get
kinked up or something.
And they slot it on purpose so that you can assemble it correctly. If they made it so you couldn't, you'd be pissed about something else, right?
Yep, fair enough.
So one of the tricks we use in the shop is if you activate the dropper lever while you take it in and out, there's no slack.
Shut the front door.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
It works. Now,
that is awesome.
I'll warn you, some bikes, you have to have three hands to do this.
Yeah.
Because you got to activate the lever while somebody is kind of feeding it through the frame.
Feeding the cable. Yeah. And then, and but, so, but I could, you could activate it.
And then like a lot of rubber time band it or
rubber
something.
Band yep. or use yeah. a zip tie or something
yeah.
like that.
I yeah. So that works pretty well. And so when we have rentals, right. That is something that we show our rental customers
because that's awesome.
Cause you know, they're changing that post all the time.
Cause that will maintain the tension. And yep. that's the problem that I have.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause if you pull up, you activate the post, it gives it slack. And then when you put it back down, it's like the housing can pop out of where it should seat.
Yeah.
And then your dropper doesn't work. And you're like, God damn it. Now I got to take it apart and seat that again. Then do it the whole thing over again.
I got to tell you, like, so along this lines, mm-hmm. like, I have replaced most of the dropper. So these are not like the reverbs. This mm-hmm. is mechanical.
Yep.
I don't know if there's other digital or electronic droppers, but like the lever.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I've replaced most. I mean, the Fox one is good.
Yeah.
Most of the other ones are fucking garbage. Yep. Best I can tell. I've put Wolf Tooth on every single one. Every bike I have's got the Wolf Tooth. Yep. Wolf Tooth.
Yeah.
It works better than any dropper lever I've seen.
They were one of the first to just put a pinch bolt instead of putting the cable head at the...
Jesus Christ. Like, you know, how simple is that?
You know what's crazy is every once in a while I'm replacing a dropper for somebody and the question is, do they need a new dropper lever? And if I look and they've got a modern 1x dropper lever, I don't try and hard sell them on a new one, you know? Yeah. Because I'm, you know, really, if they've got the old school one where you kind of break your thumb trying to use it, then I'll try and sell them a new dropper lever.
Yeah.
But they're not cheap. They're like 40 to 80 bucks, depending on which one you get.
I think the Wolf Tooth I get is, and I don't get it from Dan, I get it on Amazon, is like 60 bucks.
Did you know you can get it from the shop?
Is it for 60 bucks?
You let me know. So we'll see.
Cause I need like six of them. Yeah. So,
but back to this lever thing, you want to talk about something that just frustrates you in the bike shop is you've gotten a dropper post for the customer, the dropper post interface, the new one that they're getting to replace the crappy one that came with the bike or whatever is now got, it takes the cable head. So like the Fox droppers, they have a little
cut.
They got the cable head.
Two areas where you need a cable.
Yeah.
You're like, what the hell do I do now?
Yes. And that is frustrating when you have to call the guy back and go, hey, I'm putting your dropper on, but evidently I need, we actually at our shop, we came up with options. And so we have a fix for that.
How do you do it?
We have, we've brought in special barrels.
Yeah. That have the little,
that can crimp.
That can crimp. That kind of duplicates what
yeah. And so sometimes depending on which products they are, we can put them at one end or the other. And so those special products are nice and they save somebody 50 bucks and it's like a $2 item. I'm down for saving people money. I love saving people money. Yeah. So you reminded me of another stupid thing and we're still on dropper posts.
Yep.
Hydraulic reverb lines. So
hydraulic, like does the reverb just suck?
Okay. All right. I'm going to give you a little insight because remember, I'm the guy that fixes them.
RockShox, SRAM, Reverb, dropper post. They have both.
Been around forever. Probably one of the OG
posts. And so they have both the Access version, which is wireless.
Wireless. Yep.
Which I think is amazing, by what I can tell.
It is.
And then they have the
regular.
The regular, which is hydraulic.
Yeah. But it's been around for.
For a long time.
Over 10 years, 15 years.
Oh shit. Have droppers been around that long?
Well, so let's put it this way. The first droppers before the Reverb. Sucked. I just bought a bike.
Sucked. The ones today suck. So
well, no, this is worse. So if you would get a dropper that would have like three positions and it would creak like crazy and there was nothing you could do about it. Gravity dropper was one of them. I just bought a bike for the wall that has a gravity dropper and I'm super excited.
What's
about
the
it.
Wall?
The wall is at the shop are vintage bikes.
Yeah. So you have a bunch of old school vintage bikes up there.
Now this vintage bike is a Pivot, so that's not very vintage because they haven't been around that long. But it's got a gravity dropper on it.
You know you're old when you're putting pivots on your vintage bike wall.
Well, you know time's really flown when you can call a Pivot vintage. It's got 26-inch wheels and gravity dropper.
What? So, gravity dropper?
Yeah. So gravity droppers. Now, if I was a bike packer, I want a gravity dropper.
Why?
It's a spring and a peg. Like there's.
So it's easy to maintain if you have a problem.
They don't blow up. You know, they just creak like crazy and make a ton of noise. And, but they were super durable, you know. So before, after. Yeah. So the droppers, the first droppers that came out were pretty horrible. And the Reverb came out and it was
revolutionary.
It worked great. And compared to everybody else, it blew them away and they started showing up everywhere. And imagine what your dropper feels like now. That's what back then Reverbs felt like. Okay. They were good. But what they made a weird decision, and I'm not really sure where this came from. This is a stupid thing in bikes. Yeah. And I don't know why RockShox did this, but they decided to engineer, instead of having a cable that activates it, they decided a hydraulic line and hydraulic fluid would be better. Which
is it, dot fluid?
No, it's actually suspension fluid or okay. mineral oil.
It mineral oil?
Yeah, well,
is it,
so mineral and suspension will react to the seals the same way. If you put dot in there, it'll destroy them. Okay. So and if you mix these, by the way, so those
don't
you,
mix mineral oil with dot oil.
Yeah, so
that's a disaster.
Brakes are the biggest thing. Do not mess that up. And so in fact, let's
double click on that.
Yeah,
whatever your hydraulic brake system is. Yeah. Please make sure you know exactly what the right fluid to put in it. Because if you put the wrong fluid, you're going to fuck it up.
Beyond repair. Yeah. Like in most cases, we just retired a guy's brake system because he put dot fluid in a mineral brake system.
Why would you do that? Mineral oil is so easy.
You know, people like to fix stuff. And just because you own tools doesn't mean you can fix stuff. Now
you're making me feel bad.
I'm just saying, you know. It's not always.
I'm sorry to any bike that I fixed.
So just don't think buying the tool means you can fix it. Just own the fact that you got to learn how to work on it. So, or suffer the consequences, which can be $400. But this stupid RockShox Reverbs. Okay.
Yeah.
So history on RockShox, the first couple generations, they called them the A series. They had just a number of design flaws. So they had issues, and then they coupled that with a hydraulic lever, which is totally separate from the innards of the dropper. So now the bike mechanics, home mechanics, whoever's working on it, have to figure out how to bleed the lever and fix the post, and often confuse the two. So this is what happened with Reverb. So when they first came out, that doesn't take into account some design flaws that had to be figured out in different versions that came out later. The current version, I think we're on C. So the first versions were A, then there's A2s, then there's B1s. I think there was B2, but don't quote me. Now we're in the Cs. So these design differences have made the post pretty solid. And I would say it's a good post, but they had such a bad reputation for so long that people are just, you know, they don't want them. Like, I don't stock them, you know, I won't stock them, and I don't see them on bikes hardly. The only one that people want is the wireless.
Is the Access.
Yep. Yeah.
And there's something really, I mean, like the weight sucks, but I've heard, I don't have one because like.
Well, they work great.
I can't resolve myself to spend that much money.
Yeah. It's expensive. They do work great. They have some perks. So like we have a couple guys who race, and if their race course is pretty tame, they will go with just a straight carbon lightweight post.
And it's super easy to just pull the post out. If you have a
challenging course where you can use that post,
you
can just plop that sucker on. You don't have to run lines. You don't have to do anything. You just put a clamp on your bar and boom, off you go. It's super easy to do that. We have another guy who does bike packing and gravel bike. And so on his,
what is gravel bike?
So gravel bike.
Oh, just rides or gravel.
Well, so he was doing, like he was using his gravel bike as a bike packer. Also, it was like a mountain bike with drop bars.
Yeah. What do they call that? Like gravel king or gravel monster gravel.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm building one right now for the shop, and it's monster gravel. Too cool.
That's another stupid thing I thought in bikes.
It's weird. You know,
it's like a drop bar mountain bike.
Yeah, literally. Like, so the idea is more traction, more control, more comfort.
Yeah.
Rougher terrain.
Yeah.
But more hand position. So it's actually makes kind of sense. You know, like in the early 90s, one of my Treks was a mountain bike, but they sold it with down tube shifter bosses, and you could buy the version with drop bars. I wish I could remember. I want to say it was a Trek 7000.
Okay.
And so do you know what down tube shifters are?
Yeah.
Okay. So this mountain bike.
Are you shitting me? Had down tube shifters on it?
Yeah.
Like friction shifters or indexed?
Well, it had the bosses. so you could put whatever you wanted.
Yeah, which one?
But if you didn't have those bosses, you had to buy some crazy clamp-on system. So this bike was designed, this mountain bike was designed.
We're getting old school now. We're talking old. About this down two chip.
Before suspension forks. So yeah. That's how long ago. And so this bike came as either a drop bar mountain bike or a mountain bike.
Yeah.
And so it's pretty cool.
My old Surly Crosscheck.
Yes.
Before I got the Lightspeed that I rode today. That was it was a cross bike, but I used it as a gravel bike.
Yep.
But eventually, like, I got sick of, I think my, you know, I'm cheap, right? Mm-hmm. You know that. Cause when I told you what I want to do for my e-bike, you're like, you didn't say it, but you're like, God damn it, Josh, you can't do that for that price. But like I had Altegra like 9-speed shifters on it or something. Yeah. And I broke the levers and
they just shifted.
I just crashed or something and it just ruined them. Yeah. And I'm like, oh shit, I got to fix this bike. What am I going to do? And like, I was looking at the price. I'm like, I'm not putting new shifters. It's too expensive. Yeah. God damn it. And then I found on eBay, I could put friction shifters on it for like $4 or something. I literally
like the touring ones that go on the, did you put them on the down tube or did you put them on the end of the bars?
No, they were on the down tube.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, no, I've had both.
Yeah.
I had bought a Dura Ace.
Yep.
I had them on the bars.
Yep.
And then I think I crashed and broke those as well. After cause I had that bike for like 20 years. And then I'm like, screw that. That's too expensive. I'm going to put them on the down tube. So I put them on the down tube.
They still and they have worked those.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah.
It worked great.
It is amazing. You can still get bar end shifters for bikes and touring bikes use them and you know, all kinds of weird bikes, you know, like people build all kinds of weird
stuff. I gotta tell you, like I liked for that bike, not a mountain bike. Cause for a mountain bike, I think you need the index to get there real quick. But for the gravel bike, that friction shifter was awesome. Like I was for the price, like it was an amazing, someone should like offer like a super inexpensive, well-built, solid quality gravel bike with friction shifters.
I think so too. So working on doing a tune-up on a friction bike is awesome.
Yeah, you don't have to do anything.
No, you just set the limits. That's all you do. Set the
limits and then it's like done.
And make sure the cable tension's good.
Everything else is on the user, right?
Yep. Yeah, you know, they kind of suck to ride, you know, it's one of those like things that you get used to. I used to ride that bike like way back in the day. So it's possible, you know, but we're so spoiled now, you know.
All right. So what's our next user?
Okay.
User suggested
kind of on a little bit. It's more to the suspension side.
Who is the user?
So Justin,
what's Justin's last name?
Dietrich.
Okay. JT.
Yep. So I like this, what he does, he thinks is stupid. And because it's something that I do and I don't think we can fix this.
Uh-oh.
But I get it. So here's what he says. I hate that I can't buy suspension with a damper valved for a weight or style of rider. It would be nice to buy a Fox or Onyx Bomber. He just slammed all those together.
Onyx is a DJ. Bomber is Marzocchi.
Well, so Fox shocks. Onyx is DVO and the Bomber is Marzocchi. So yeah. So with a heavy stack for heavier riders like myself, I can't imagine if it was a lady and tipped in at 100 pounds. I bet they're all stiff. So okay.
So what is Justin wearing?
So his stupid is, why is there a generic valving when you buy a fork? And he's right. Okay. So when you buy a fork,
is he right?
He is, and there's exceptions, but he is right. So like if you buy a Fox fork.
And I'm a 240-pound man. Used to be a 305-pound man.
That's freaking awesome. Congratulations, by the way. Now that I see you enough, I don't notice it.
You don't notice it.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
But when I don't see you for a while, you see it.
Yeah.
So now imagine you buy a fork.
Yeah.
And it is meant for you and Lacey.
Yeah. That's the forks that we have.
Yeah. And so what happens is.
So Lacey weighs like, I don't know what, 120 pounds or something. And exactly. I weigh 240 pounds.
Yeah. So why are they the same fork for two totally different people?
Yeah.
So there's lots of suspension answers to this. So number one, when I talk to other tuners and other people that do suspension, they will say that's why they exist. So Vorsprung and Push Industries, these guys,
and Guru Suspension.
We're at a different level because we're more service. We do tuning and we do valving and all of that stuff. We just haven't hung our hat on only doing that.
Yeah.
And now Push has gotten out of doing service and they only create product and And that's it. So they're no longer working on people's stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're only working on their
own
stuff.
They're just doing, like, you know, like inverted inverted forks now. Their new fork.
Yep, their new fork. Vorsprung is very similar. They started off just like us, like a guy who just likes suspension and was into it.
So that means you're going to be making suspension products soon? Is that what I'm saying?
I've already started thinking about it. we'll see. I need to have time.
If you're looking for investors, right here.
So, but they do come up with stuff. There's another guy, Anthony Diaz. He does this thing called the Runt, and he's a suspension guy like me.
Okay.
And he's done team mechanic stuff similar to mine.
Where's he based out of?
Colorado. Krista was his team rider for a while. I've met him a couple times. He's a cool guy.
Yeah.
Similar to me. Just, yeah. So the Runt is a cool product.
By the way, I think Guru is way better than the Runt, just from a branding perspective.
So the Runt is the product, but Diaz Suspension is the company, and they're a good guy. He's a good guy. He basically just, I think he got tired of being oily. Honestly, I think these guys get tired of being oily, and they're like, if I could sell stuff that's not full of oil all the time, that's what I'm thinking. But so I'm okay with being oily. I'm always elbows deep in oil.
Yeah, that's what she said.
Yep, exactly.
just for the record, Dan's okay with being oily.
So aside from the product, what Justin's comment is addressing is that why are these things generic? And so if you talk to those companies, they'll say, absolutely, you should have a more tuned suspension to your size, your riding style. You should have custom suspension. Everybody should have custom suspension.
Yeah, yeah.
So what Fox and RockShox and all these other companies will tell you is we can't do that. We just can't make custom suspension for every single individual.
Yeah, too many SKUs.
Yep. Well, not only that, but it's complicated because you can have a 220-pound rider who only rides Vail Vortex.
Yeah, which is like
So
it's like mellow cross-country trails.
Yeah, cross-country trails. And then you can have a 100-pound soaking wet lady who does huge drops at a big bike park, you know? And so you can't go off their size. You have to go off their ride style and their size and their type of bike and their type of suspension. And so these suspension companies make them very adjustable and a very wide range of adjustment.
Yeah.
And if you happen to be on the outlier, you can still get them custom tuned. We do custom tuning in the shop all the time.
Yeah.
We take a very pragmatic approach. So some service centers, I feel, oversell tuning. Yeah. They oversell it in a way that kind of gives the customer kind of false idea of how much it's going to make a difference.
Yeah.
And I rather look at, is it going to really make a difference? I had one customer who said, I don't care if it makes a difference. I just want it so that I don't have to think about that.
Yeah.
And I respect that, you know, and I custom tuned his. I don't know if he noticed a difference. I ride with him all the time. Shout out to Luke. But his philosophy was sound and I'm okay with that. But if somebody feels like they're not getting all out of their bike and they're 180 pounds, and they're riding they're 6 foot tall and they're riding a large, you know, all mountain bike, there's a good chance that thing's already tuned for you. And all you need to do is do setup. But if you take that same person and he is constantly bottoming out because he's hitting 30-foot gaps, then he may need custom tuning. So, so that's the answer to Justin's stupid thing, which is, yes, it's dumb, but they are such a wide adjustment range that for the majority of people, they don't need custom tuning. And you can get them custom tuned if you need it. So, okay, what's the next
one? I'm looking to see what other...
So we had Ashley. I will do, since we're looking, I'll
okay,
do...
Okay, so Trent Kendall.
Oh, yes, Trent. So I raced with Trent. He raced an e-bike up in Bootleg with us. So what's his...
So he says, okay, I got a few.
Okay.
Only SRAM has the nicer derailleur lockout that makes it easier to remove the rear wheel.
Okay.
So that it's not a derailleur lockout, but it's the derailleur...
It's a cage lock.
The cage lock.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would agree that sucks that Shimano doesn't have that.
Yeah, so it's cool. So that's what I call a cup holder in the car thing. So that means once you have it, when you don't have it, you really miss it because it's convenient.
I love that, but it's not enough to make me run that junky SRAM shit.
You're just picking fights tonight.
I love Shimano. So,
I because I sell both, I love them both. But I will tell you that every single bike that I have has SRAM on it. So
and over every single bike I have has Shimano.
Yep.
So that's perfect.
And you know what? That's okay.
That's okay.
Yeah.
So then he goes into only Shimano. Wait. Only Shimano has a trigger shifter.
Yes. Yes, he's right.
SRAM's trying to wear out my thumb.
SRAM has double thumb.
Yep.
Shimano, here's the weird thing about that. Shimano made their trigger thumb or trigger thumb. That's kind of crazy. I got to give kudos to Shimano for that because they're more inclusive, right?
Okay. Yeah. Shimano is like the more inclusive company.
Inclusive.
Yeah.
Yep, so exactly.
I would say.
Okay.
I would say that the SRAM like cage lockout.
Yep.
It's not as valuable as Shimano being more inclusive.
We're talking about stupid stuff. And I'm going to tell you, all of this right here gets me to the stupidest thing.
Okay.
Why can't these two play together?
Why would they play together? They're competitors.
Why can't I use a Shimano shifter with a SRAM derailleur?
You know the answer to that question.
I know
question.
It, but I don't understand but,
you
know, it.
Just like, you understand
I mean,
it.
I understand how it works, but what I don't understand
if they make
is,
them if they make them compatible, they're eating into their own business.
Well, yeah, I mean, they would have to admit who's right, right?
Which is you Shimano.
Because eventually somebody would sell more than the other.
Hey, Shimano. You know? I mean, come on, the Japanese versus the Taiwanese?
So really it comes down to what's more important to you, the cage lock or the trigger shift?
No, I'm just saying that Shimano products work better.
No, but that's wrong.
They do. They work better.
I love how you say that. Oh, you know what? Wait, I can address that.
Okay, what are you going to address? Because
so,
they do.
Because you're
at my price point.
You're right to a point. So Shimano does a great job of making things that are smooth. It just takes them forever to be last place on
I agree.
Technology.
If you're concerned with like not having quality and you're concerned with like the newest, fastest new product, then I would go with SRAM.
No.
Axis is a great example.
Okay.
So if you're like, I want to make sure that I can wait and see what happens and make sure that what I put out is perfect, excluding DI2, then, then it would be 100% Shimano.
That's what somebody who comes in second place says.
Oh my God. Here we go.
Like they're like, hey, I made sure that it was safe to run that race by letting SRAM win.
All right, here's another. Here's another stupid thing. SRAM uses torque head bolts. Did they exclusively on some things?
Well, so a while ago, and this is true. So like when XX first came out, which is 11-speed 1x. So again, because SRAM innovated and made the first 1x system, and it took Shimano many, many years to catch up.
Yeah. So there's a whole thing. So, you know, I do like strategy for a living.
Yeah.
There's a whole thing about being first mover or second mover.
Yep.
And sometimes it's way smarter to be second mover because there's not the risk and liability.
Yep.
Safe.
Totally safe.
And quality and good value.
Meanwhile,
someone else is doing the crazy out there shit. If you want the crazy out there shit, buy SRAM. If you want like good quality, inexpensive products that will last you forever, use Shimano.
You remember who got on the moon first?
Yeah. But do you know the difference? Have you ever shot an Have you ever shot an AK-47
So
here's the difference between we got a great analogy. Here's the difference between Shimano and SRAM. Okay. Now an AK-47 is a Russian product. It's a machine gun.
Okay.
You can take an AK-47, you can put it in a swamp, you can leave it there for like 6 months.
Okay.
You can pull it out of that swamp.
Okay.
You can throw a magazine in it and then it'll shoot.
All right.
Now, it's not going to be super accurate, but it's going to shoot every time.
Okay.
Now, the AR-15, which is the American version of a machine gun, similar.
AK-47 and the AR-15.
AR-15 is super accurate.
I don't know anything about that.
Yeah. So AR-15 is super accurate.
Okay.
It's going to like, it's dead nuts.
Okay.
Sometimes AK-47, one round will go over there, one round will go over there.
Sometimes you shoot a friend. Sometimes you shoot an enemy.
Well, usually if you're shooting in a direction, you're not aiming towards your friend, but whatever.
If you're shooting into a crowd, it's a good gun.
AK-47, if you sneeze on an AR-15, it's not going to work.
Okay.
An AK-47, you can keep in a swamp for 6 months and it's going to work.
Okay.
I want the product that's going to work.
I got to change the analogy. Okay.
Something away from guns.
So, simple works, right? I would say
Shimano.
Toyota. Okay. Toyota. Let's do cars.
I mean, I drive a Toyota.
I drive a Toyota too.
Yep.
SRAM is like a Lexus. It's just a nicer version and it's better.
I would say that like SRAM feels more like a Harley Davidson to me, that when it works, it's nice. But most of the time,
that's not a good analogy.
But most of the time, you're pushing it.
That's not a good analogy.
Like, have you ever seen a bike with NX or SX on it?
Who's got the older design that's been around forever and they don't innovate? Harley Davidson or Honda?
I don't know. I don't know the analogy there.
SRAM is okay. But we're Shimano, way off.
No. This is good. Shimano's got old shit that works. SRAM's got new shit that sometimes works.
No. See.
I will say that Axis drivetrain, while it's so expensive and crazy heavy, works like a fucking charm.
Crazy. It's lighter.
It's so heavy.
Lighter.
Okay. Add batteries. And is it lighter than DI2? I don't even know.
Oh, definitely.
Because Shimano's Shimano has like.
So
like
in the mountain bike, in the mountain bike world, DI2 is like.
Yeah, it's garbage.
Well, and
I'll concede that.
I will give you that Shimano makes quality product. I sell them both. So I really don't like taking a stance.
Yeah.
I'm
sorry that you are.
So some of the reasons that I'll take a stance don't actually have to do with the product. And we were talking about this earlier with Consumer Direct and things like that. Sometimes bike shop guys will make a decision based on how much they get the stuff for, what comes on the bike or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I would say, for me, I will give you an example. Shimano, I think, is a better system if it's mechanical.
Yep.
And SRAM and is SRAM,
like 10,000 times better if it's electric.
Yes. Yeah.
So there you go. That's a simple thing. If you want a mechanical system, go Shimano. Yeah. If you want an electric system, although I will tell you the SRAM GX and above.
So, okay.
Mechanical.
So here's SRAM what made GX me, what
and made above me, mechanical. Works
I wondered where your trauma with SRAM came from.
It's NX and SX.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, dude. So we will not carry SX in the shop. Yeah. I have told the guys, do not bring SX in except for the cranks. Who cares about cranks?
So just wait.
Here's the thing. Stupid stuff. We're talking about stupid stuff.
We are.
There's this old standard called power spline that Truvative came out with a long time ago.
It's a spline
system. So the crank arms attached to the bottom bracket with a spline. Whatever reason, they decided to make it smaller instead of bigger. And so when spline
mechanically, system, that sounds stupid.
It's dumb. You know, it's really dumb. And so what would happen is they would come loose. They would strip out. They were awful. They were just awful cranks.
Yeah. This is Truvative, SRAM now.
Yeah, this is Truvative. And Truvative was part of SRAM during this. Yeah, yeah.
That was like the ghetto SRAM?
No, SRAM acquired Truvative at some point, and now they've kind of just melded so much it's hard to tell.
Is Truvative even a brand anymore?
Yeah, they're still around. Yeah, okay. So they'll do a lot of like components, and sometimes they'll have a Truvative crank on a SRAM bike. It's really a SRAM crank. But in Shimano, they call it non-series, and they'll just put Shimano on it. And it won't be XT or LX or something, or SLX or something like that.
Yeah.
In SRAM, sometimes their non-series would be like a Truvative crank.
But like the non-series SRAM brakes, as an example, like the MT-201s or 401s.
Are you talking Shimano? Yeah.
They're fucking awesome.
They're great. Yeah.
They're awesome.
Yep. Yeah.
But the non-series SRAM stuff or the SX and NX suck ass.
So SX and NX is not non-series. That's the crazy part. Okay. So here's the thing about SX. Have you ever seen the movie Office Space?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. One of my favorites, right?
Yeah, it's a great movie.
One of my favorite scenes is the copier. So if anybody
when they're out there slashing to the copier. That's the wrap, what I want to do with any SRAM series.
We want to.
NX or GSX.
So NX we do okay with.
But really?
Yeah. So
really?
You want to know what the difference is?
What?
SX has plastic. And I think this actually affects us in the Southwest desert here because we're so hot. The plastic, I don't think, holds its shape correctly under load. And so when you shift it, it will just misshift like crazy. We do not carry that product in the shop. It is so bad. And I will say that right to SRAM's face. It is awful, awful product.
Yeah.
I would take a Dior or a low-end Shimano 100 times over that. So you are correct in that sense.
So now, can we align on... If you're budget-minded, which I am.
Yes.
The Qs, the Dior, the SLX, they perform amazingly.
Yes. Yeah, they do really well. So SRAM shines at the GX level and above.
I would agree with that.
The NX does really well if you cherry pick. So for instance,
I've had bad experience with
here, I'll give you an example. I'll put an NX shifter on a GX rear derailleur, an NX cassette, and a GX chain on a bike.
As long as it's got a GX, so the derailleur is my
That's why I say cherry pick. Yep. Yeah.
So if you have a GX derailleur and an NX shifter, actually I've had problems with NX shifters as well. So
they have two versions. The nice one has a separate clamp. And that's the one you want.
Okay.
And so in this scenario, this is our Nika bike, right? This is for the kids racing. They want the best raceable stuff, but they're super low cost. And so we call this our Nika setup. We'll cherry pick the parts and we basically take the best of what it is. And then we minimize the stuff that doesn't make as much. For instance, the NX cassette fits a HG cassette hub body.
Right. So does the Q's XT stuff. But might as well just go Q's XT.
But if you're buying before that stuff came out, well before that stuff.
Yeah.
And this is one of my points with the time. So we got serious here. We were joking around, but serious comparing stuff. One of the reasons.
Did we get serious? Yeah, I didn't realize we got serious. That we got serious at some point.
So one of the reasons that I do like SRAM is because SRAM had 12 speed a long time ago. SRAM had one by a long time ago.
Yeah.
And so in the bike shop, we're seeing people come in with their old two bys and it sucks and they don't want it and they want to upgrade. And SRAM was there for them and Shimano wasn't.
But they are now.
They are now, but we give SRAM a little credit for being there for those people.
I don't give a shit about that. I want the best product. If I'm putting low-end parts on my bike, Shimano is the way to go.
But what would you have said back when you had a 2x,
Shimano? I was running SRAM GX. I would just put SRAM GX if I had it.
That's the thing.
But so that's not today. I don't give a shit about yesterday. We're today.
Today.
Our consumers today.
Today.
Shimano.
You can put XTR on your bike, right?
Who would do that?
I do it.
Ultra rich people or people that own bike shops.
Well, yeah, that's
I don't
true.
Have the money for. So. I've never in my life, besides the 20-year-old stuff, owned an XTR component. What the fuck would I do with that?
Stupid thing in bikes.
Yeah.
Okay, ready for another stupid thing in bikes?
Yes.
The top end stuff's price.
It's nuts.
It's crazy.
It's like for what? For 4 grams, I get I got to pay an extra $400. Yep. Shut the front door.
So I do this for a living, right? I sit in the bike shop. People come in and I have to talk to them and I have to.
Do you talk them out of XTR?
So one of the things you learn is that it's not your wallet. You help them. It's true. It's true. I'm not kidding.
I love that, dude. It's not your wallet.
Well, it's not.
No.
So if you come in the store and I would buy XTR, I can't assume that you would.
Yeah.
It's not
my
wallet.
Would you really buy XTR?
I do. I've bought it.
Because you're a weight guy.
Well, so.
Because that's really the only value you're getting out of XTR.
So here, let's qualify. So I'm a bang for the buck master. Like I love bang for the buck.
That's
okay.
Dior.
Well, no, no. See, you are a cheap bastard.
I'm not going to deny that.
And I'm going to tell you that Dior is good stuff.
It's great stuff.
But if you want the best stuff at the lowest price, it's XT.
Okay. And I got a lot of XT out there.
Yes. Yeah. So that's the bang for the buck.
But XT is a couple orders of magnitude more expensive than
it is
in Dior.
But imagine that you get a 20% gain when you go from Dior to SLX, and then you get another 20% when you go to SLX to
Can you tell? Because I have SLX and XT on some of my bikes, and besides weight, I can tell a difference in performance.
So one of the things, so that comment, it's not our wallet. We have to use the customer's wallet.
Yeah.
So we have to figure out what's important to them, and we have to figure out what they need and try and help them as good as possible. Now, if you do a disservice to the customer, you just try and tell them what you want. And that's not a good way to go. Sometimes
so you got to figure out what's driving them.
And
then match their desires and their available budget to the right product.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's XTR. Sometimes that's Dior. And sometimes in the rare occasion that is a SRAM product.
Maybe just once in a while. I have all kinds of customers and one of the fun things about my job is figuring this stuff out, you know, cause I like a puzzle, you know?
Yeah.
And so somebody comes in and they will mention a product and I have to first figure out why, You know, is it something that they know they want, or is it something they just heard about? Is it popular? Did a ad pop up on Facebook and that's why they're asking about it? That's legit.
Like, no, I'm totally telling legit. You, man, I bought a bunch of shit from the Instagram, Facebook. Yeah.
Product. And so I have to help them through that. Yeah, and then I have good marketing. Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're just slaves. We're slaves to input. When you see something, psychologically, when you see something over and over again,
or you hear something over and over again.
Yep. All of that.
Shimano,
stuff.
Shimano, Shimano.
Yep. Shram, Shram, Shram. access, access, access. Anyway, when you're a customer and you're trying to figure this out, we need to respect what you need. So for instance, if you come in the shop, I'm going to look at budget orientated.
Yeah.
But I'm going to try, like I am in this conversation, to help you understand that sometimes if you let money drive your decision, it'll short yourself.
Yeah.
And so sometimes, you know, if you choose something purely on money, you end up paying for it later.
He's trying to talk me into spending more on my e-bike.
Well,
right now.
not really.
He is. No, I'm telling you, he is.
No, I can get you a cheaper e-bike, but it'll be cheaper.
And it won't be as good. Well, and you're going
to
pay for it.
So this is to my point. When you are trying to figure out if cheaper is better, you have to figure out your drawbacks. Like, what is your drawback going to be? So, like, for instance, you keep mentioning weight, right? And so if you don't care about weight, then yes, you can save a ton of money, because in the bike industry, it is exponential expense for lightweight. Yeah. And so when we were talking about SLX versus XT, there's a big performance jump and not a huge price jump.
So I have not seen a big performance jump. It's, so where? In the brakes? In the
shift derailleur? Quality?
Shift quality?
Weight,
really?
Yep. Yeah. Cranks. Really? Yep. Yeah. So now bottom bracket, not so much. Right.
Yeah,
chain, so.
Yeah.
There is a gains in the chain. And so you may not notice them. So here's the other thing is, do you actually get the advantage? If I'm sprinting at the start of a race in a parking lot to get to the funnel that is that single track, and I am trying to get out in front of every other rider.
Perfect.
So that I don't have to pass them.
Yep.
And I have to shift under load at full speed.
XTR is going to be better, or XT is going to be better than SLX.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Here's another one. I'm a heavier guy. I always have been. For me, how heavy the bike is adds to how hard it is for me to get up
the
hill.
Even for me, the fat guy?
Yeah. Well, but for me.
For you.
We're talking about, what's good for you is not always good for me.
Fair enough.
So when I climb a hill, I don't like it. And so the lighter the bike, the less unliked that is. And so when I'm climbing a hill, the lighter my bike is, I appreciate that, and it makes my ride better. Now when I descend like a demon. It doesn't matter. You know, I'm going to have a blast descending.
Yeah, yeah.
But the hard part of the ride, the part that I don't enjoy that much, is the climb.
Yeah.
And so
the lighter bike you is, the better the climb is.
Yep, exactly. Now, here's the thing. I have a bike for climbing. And then I have a bike for descending. So
you have a bike for climbing that's got a motor.
No, I have a bike for climbing that doesn't have a motor, and it's 23 pounds.
That's my
Pivot Mach 4 SL.
Yeah.
And
it's a badass bike.
Dude. It's so light. And when I ride that bike, I feel more lively. I feel better. I feel more fit. Yeah. And that weight difference, that light bike makes a big difference. And so for me, in my ride, I am minimizing the pain and maximizing the fun, right?
Yeah.
And so now, here's the thing. I have customers that come in the shop. They can get to the top of the hill no problem. They weigh 130 pounds, you know?
Yeah.
And weight is not an issue. But when they turn the bike downhill, every little shelf that they go off of freaks them out. And going down that hill and carrying any kind of speed and not feeling scared that you're going to flip over and get hurt is where they...
So this gets to your point that really understanding every one of us is different.
Yes.
And like, we're joking and we're like arguing, whatever.
Yeah.
We're all coming from a different perspective.
Yep.
From my perspective where I sit, what I care about.
Yep.
The low end Shimano works awesome.
And it does.
And from your perspective, the high end SRAM is amazing.
But here's the thing about that SRAM. I value what they've done in the industry. I value what they've done for bike shops. Yeah. I value the innovation. So all of those factors go into my mind, which may not go into somebody else.
Some consumers that they might care about that, and other consumers may not.
Yeah. And they may just be like, hey, I want a 12 speed when Shimano didn't have it. Right.
I do have one more stupid thing.
Okay.
And then maybe,
I got one funny one.
Okay, go.
Okay. So Brian Trader.
Who's Brian Trader? I don't know Brian.
So he posted up on Mountain Cog's Facebook, another one. He brought up a Hammerschmidt.
This is the Hammerschmidt. This is the, gearbox
10 years ago.
Maybe. Gearbox. Is that what we're talking about? What are we talking about?
12, 13 years ago.
Okay.
It is a 2-speed, planetary gear system.
What the hell? What the hell is a planetary gear system?
So
is this a gearbox?
So he's saying it's stupid, right?
Is this a gearbox?
It kind of. It's built into a crank, so you could add it to a bike. You didn't have to have it built on the bike.
This is the future, bro.
Gearboxes
is the future.
If you notice, it doesn't exist anymore.
Gearboxes. Well, I don't know if we're talking about gearboxes or not, but gearboxes are the future.
Here's what happened with the Hammerschmidt. You would set this up on a bike, and it was a 1-speed. So this is 12, this 13,
14. Why are we talking about a defunct 12-year-old product that's no longer available? It's a stupid shit in the bike industry.
Well, because it was stupid, and it went away.
And it went away. Yep. Okay, good. So that's supply and demand.
It is, but I loved it. I did. I would yell. All
right, back to Shimano and Shrimp.
We were riding on a local trail that's all gravity, which is called Bug Springs. And we're doing, it's pretty aggressive.
Yeah.
And at the beginning of this trail, you drop in real quick. So you're immediately going downhill. So you're kind of shifting down into your speed cogs, your 12, 13 tooth to get that speed on the descent.
Yeah.
And it drops down into a little tiny valley and then it immediately goes straight up.
Yeah.
And the Hammerschmidt would shift under load instantly. And so I would get down to that, hit the hammer shifter, which was on the left because it would act like a front derailleur, and it would dump it to the easy gear immediately under full power.
Yeah.
And I would go up immediately where all the other guys behind me are fiddling either with their front derailleur, this is a while ago, and dumping their chain off and have to get off and fix it, or they were having to shift through the backs, to get up to the gear that they needed, and they weren't wide range back then. So
is Hammerschmidt even in business anymore?
So you're missing the point.
What's the point?
I would yell Hammerschmidt to the top of the
lungs. Jesus Christ.
As I dropped all my buddies on the climb. And I would drop them on that trail because of that product. And so Brian is just giving me shit.
because he wrote that.
Because I would yell Hammerschmidt. And it was a stupid product and it did go away. And to your point, and we can talk about gearbox at a different time.
Yeah, yeah.
The reason that Hammerschmidt failed is the drag that it caused. Yeah,
once they get the drag thing figured out, I'm telling you,
gearboxes
are going to take
over. I think gearbox e-bikes is going to be...
Well, that's already a thing. Yeah. Like the new Pinion. Shimano?
No.
Oh, you haven't heard about the new Shimano yet?
Oh, yeah, I have. The new Pinion.
It's money.
Yeah, and that is a true gearbox.
It's money for today, but it's coming.
Because the shifting is happening in the gearbox, whereas the Shimano motor has a gearbox to reduce the power. That's it. It's not, so there's drag in the motor, but it's reducing the speed of the motor to a reasonable amount that will drive the chain.
I'm going to predict the future now. Gearboxes is the future.
Yeah. You need to listen to Pink Bike a little bit.
I have. they don't agree. Yeah, but listen, I'm an independent thinker.
You got to ride one. So next time we go to a bike fest,
you have a gearbox in the bike shop?
I don't know, because the biggest advantage to gearbox is in adverse conditions. Because the derailleur gets gunky and nasty.
We don't have that so much here.
We have such a great climate where we're at that we don't have a lot of the things. I have a lot of friends that are in UK, and what they go through there is insane.
Yeah.
Like I don't know what we would do, but they would have no idea how to survive here at 110 degrees, So it's just different. It's always climate, things like belt drives, gearboxes. In the UK, in that kind of environment, in wet, muddy, nasty terrain, they are awesome. And they're almost a necessity. Here, you can save a lot of money and a lot of friction, a lot of drag, and not have it.
So I've got one final thing.
Okay.
And we'll probably end on this if that's okay.
Yep, absolutely.
So, and I actually have a handful of things. I'm trying to find like a low-end bike for my my cousin.
Okay.
Matt, the gray man.
Yeah.
But it is, and I hate to like bang, like bash more on SRAM. Actually, I don't hate it. I kind of like it. But like the low-end RockShox suspension,
yep,
whether it's forks or shocks, which seems to come on every low-end bike, mm-hmm. they just suck. Tell yep. me I'm wrong, but like I would rather you put, and I think nowadays Marzocchi is the low-end version of Fox.
Yep. Yeah.
I would rather you spec a bike with a Marzocchi Z1 or Z2 or whatever yep. they're calling them.
Marzocchi.
I mean, you're still using the grip damper.
Yeah. It, well, they have the rail now. So,
oh, okay. Is the rail, I don't even know. Is the rail a good damper?
Grip damper is I don't want to say sealed, but it's a damper unit and it uses the IFP. We've covered this before
yep.
in the podcast, but basically it's the oil system is separate from the lowers oil. It doesn't mix and it's minimal oil to minimize weight and it minimizes aeration yep. of the oil.
That all sounds good to yep. me.
It all works great. And the grip's awesome. On some of the Marzocchis, they use a rail, which is basically an old system, which is very similar to the RockShox system.
So if you want to get a Marzocchi, get one with a grip.
Yeah. And sometimes you can just upgrade.
Okay.
So here's the thing about Marzocchis, that they're basically a Fox. Fox wanted to make a more affordable fork. They acquired Marzocchi for pretty much the name, but they really didn't use hardly anything of Marzocchi.
No, right.
And when they developed...
That all went to DVO, right?
No. So the DVO story is the guys who did the good Marzocchi
yeah.
got so pretty fed up with the new Marzocchi. This is before Fox, when it was...
Yeah, Marzocchi kind of went downhill for a time.
Yeah, Marzocchi went from Italy to Taiwan and not in a good way. And... Yeah. Their quality dropped and their performance dropped and they got overly complicated and didn't work very well. And yep. the guys who used to do the good Marzocchi were so frustrated feeling all that stuff. They left, literally yeah. just left
yeah.
a bunch of them and started DVO. And DVO is the true spirit of that older Marzocchi, like super yeah. smooth.
By the brush. Way, we shouldn't be slamming Taiwan because like some of the best bikes in the world yeah. are coming out of Taiwan right now. So like, please don't walk away yeah. with thinking Taiwan equals bad.
No,
actually Taiwan equals good.
Yeah.
And there's a whole bunch of other like yep. Asian, yeah. Asian areas that equal bad.
The company that acquired them from the Italian original design
didn't do well.
They were bean counting. They were more worried about the bottom line and they yeah. weren't worried about performance. And yeah. when you do that in a passion based industry, which we are, you lose your customers because yep. you know, it just doesn't work. Now the new Marzocchi under Fox is pretty much Fox product.
Yeah.
I don't know this 100%. Like I can't quote whatever memo they may have put out about this, but basically Fox wanted a product that would compete with the lower end RockShox because yeah. that's the one place that Fox really could not compete.
Didn't have a place.
They still don't really because you can get a Judy for $250 and it's a decent fork. So there's different versions and it's rebuildable. And if I'm getting a low end bike, I would rather have that than some of the more no name brands.
Like SR Sun Tour low end?
Yeah, so I have a love hate with Sun Tour. So Sun Tour,
I'm hearing that the new Sun Tour stuff is like
so
money.
Nobody
like the high end stuff.
Nobody knows this, but the high end Sun Tour stuff is good.
Yeah,
but nobody knows it because only thing that they ever see is the lowest, crappiest stuff.
Well, then some of the e-bikes are coming out with some of the new e-bikes are coming out with the high end Sun Tour stuff,
yep.
and like
they're okay.
I've watched on like the Lone Wolf and stuff like that. Yep. They're like yeah. supposed to be really good. I can't remember the names. I don't want to misquote them, but like
so.
But you think the low end RockShox stuff?
So here's the thing.
Yeah.
I would rather have a low-end bike come with a RockShox fork that is repairable and not disposable
than
an Sun RST Tour or something. Or Sun Tour that ends up... Okay,
okay so, I'm with you. I'm with
at
you.
At that point, when I'm paying $200 for a Sun Tour RST or whatever, and I'm paying $250 for a RockShox, I would rather have that RockShox.
But you have a choice between a low-end bike with a RockShox or a low-end Marzocchi. What are you going to choose?
Well, so that's the problem. You're not... that's apples and oranges.
No, it's not.
No. Okay, now let's ramp up. Okay.
So you're saying that like
ramp
the lowest
up.
End. So like the RockShox, like 35 gold or whatever.
So that
that's
is,
the same. I seen the same price point as I would like take a Marzocchi
over a RockShox 35 gold every single time.
That's
every
what
time.
I think. Yes. That's what I think is a stupid thing.
Reba and a Revelation, different story. Because they're not built. So they.
So what about the Lyric and the Zeb? Are those like great
still good.
Shocks?
Yeah. Now here's the thing. You got what RockShox does that Fox doesn't is they have a huge spectrum. And so you got a cheapie and then you got the ultimate, right?
Where does the cheapie stop in RockShox?
So there's a couple things that RockShox will do to change the level. Uh-huh. Sometimes it will be the chassis. And when I say chassis, that's going to be lowers and CSU, which is the upper and lowers. And that's like the husk, yep. right? Then sometimes they'll change the damper or the air system. And so all those changes allow them to have multiple levels, right?
So what's the lowest level RockShox fork that you
usually select? Sometimes it's just Lyric. But like you'll get weird OE ones. I have an OE Zeb in the shop. It has no adjustment for the damper. Like there's no.
So even Zeb.
It has rebound and that's it. There's no compression adjustment. It's the weirdest thing for me.
But you had me pull the select off my.
So the low end stuff does not have the same level of suspension. Sometimes they'll change the bushings. So like when you get into SIDs on the low end
SIDs are good.
SIDs. Well, so here's the thing. They make a low end SID and they make
a high end SID. Jesus Christ. This is SRAM for you.
Okay.
So goddamn complicated that you need like a master's degree to figure out what fork works.
Fox, pretty straightforward.
Yeah. If you buy a Fox, it's going to be, it's like performance or factory.
They have three main levels.
I know they have like the Rhythm, the Elite, in performance.
If the Rhythm's a OE.
Okay.
Okay. So you'll see that on bikes, but you can't just go to Fox.
What does that mean? If I get a Rhythm, what does that mean?
Original equipment.
So, no, I know what OE means, but like what is, if I get a Rhythm versus a regular performance versus Elite, what's different about those forks?
The castings, everything. So it's a pretty
different fork. But it's the same damper.
Not always.
I mean, So isn't it just grip or grip two?
Well, so sometimes you'll see a Rhythm with a rail.
What?
Yeah. So
shut the front door. Really?
Yep. It's weird. So Fox hasn't done this as much as RockShox. So for the most part, a Rhythm has a different chassis. So a Rhythm 34 and a Performance 34 are not the same. They don't have the same size damper, but they may be both grips. Okay.
Okay. I don't understand that. So
they're
the diameters
they're
different?
Not interchangeable. They're not interchangeable.
So obviously the performance damper is better.
Yeah. I'll give you an example of why this is important. I'll see somebody online say, oh, I've got a Rhythm or I've got a Fox fork and it's got the grip damper. And somebody will say, just go get a grip two and throw it in there. And then you'll pretty much have a factory fork without Kashima. And that is not true on a Rhythm. So you can't do that on a Rhythm. And so, so with Fox product, it's a lot smaller SKUs. So you have factory level.
Yep.
And then sometimes you have different damper adjustments. So different, like a fit damper versus a grip two damper.
And that really is like if you go to a 32, you get the fits in there, 32s. But once you get to 34, unless you're talking about step cast, you're pretty much at like, if it's factory, it's grip two. 34, 36, 38,
34 is pretty variable. 36, we're not seeing the fits anymore. They're all grip twos.
Yeah.
And of course, up from there, it's all grip two.
Four factory.
Yeah.
But you can get a 36 with a grip that's performance.
Yes. Yeah. So, and then there's this weird thing called Performance Elite.
Right. So what the hell is that?
That is a factory without Kashima.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. So,
because the Kashima is just a fucking, it's just a marketing bullshit, right?
Remember those marginal gains. So like,
is it really worthwhile? Is Kashima worth anything?
So remember the XT to XTR we were talking about? That's what Kashima kind of does. It's not a huge difference.
Right.
I would say, and this is just my opinion as somebody who sells
a
lot of this.
As the guru suspension guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So your opinion matters.
More people buy Kashima because they want
Kashima.
People to see the Kashima.
Yeah. This is like, you know, like we talked about this earlier.
Yeah.
Poor people buy brands.
Yeah.
Rich people buy quality. I might as well buy the Performance Elite because what the hell is Kashima doing for me?
Well, in your stance, right? So if you are taking, and I have a friend who does this, he'll buy a brand new $1,200 Fox 38, and then he'll immediately want to go out and buy some sort of push spring kit or special upgrade, or, you know what I mean? He'll spend all this extra money to try and make it even better.
Does he have that kind of skill?
Sometimes, and most often not. Yeah. Or here's what I find is there may be a different product, or he's just getting caught up in the marketing, which does happen, you know?
Yeah.
And so again, it goes back to stupid things, you know?
Yeah. Stupid things.
If we wrap this podcast
talk up, to your LBS,
to
figure out what you actually need.
There are,
and it might not be aligned with the marketing.
There are a lot of stupid things out there, and sometimes they're super shiny and awesome looking, may not be the best thing for you. If you have somebody who can help you with that, you are really ahead of most people.
That's great.
And
what you get from your LBS.
And I'll give you one last piece of advice.
Yeah.
If you're buying consumer direct and you're reading the reviews off of their website, you're not doing a good job. I'm just going to tell you.
Any product you're buying, if you're reading the reviews off the website of the company that you're buying from.
Please read maybe reviews not the most that objective. Are not from the company. It drives me nuts.
All right, man. We have obviously.
This is a long one.
Yeah, this is a super long one. We were planning for this. Anyways, we appreciate you all.
Yes.
Let us know what you think. And hey, man. Thanks for coming out.
Absolutely.
We spent like a long time together. We weren't planning on that.
I know. It's a late night.
It worked out. All right. Take care. What's up? This is Josh from the Mountain Cock Podcast. You got questions, comments, or feedback? Well, we'd love to hear from you. Shoot us an email. You can send it to mountaincog@gmail.com. Digging the show? There's a couple things you could do to help us out. First, you could tell your friends about Mountain Cog. And also, it would be great if you'd give us a good rating and review over at Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen. We appreciate y'all. Go ride. Keep the rubber side down.